What Tynwald lacked in length this week, it more than made up for in big announcements and policy changes, while Alf Cannon's statement on his ministerial reshuffle and a cooling and enthusiasm on the living wage grabbed the headlines, homelessness, the island's cattle health status, and a call for a forensic audit of health were also covered. We'll hear more about that later in the programme, but first, the public gallery was packed with business owners concerned about the impact of rises to the minimum wage. One of those was Port Erin business owner Julie Goldie. Talking to Julie Goldie, and you run a hospitality business in the south of the island. You have been deeply concerned at the proposed increase from in the minimum wage up to a living wage. What were your concerns?
Basically, trying to work out where the money was going to come from. My little business is doing relatively well, has continued to do so. Our numbers are fairly stable coming through the door. But what we've noticed is that the average spend is down. So if people are spending less, where will the extra come from to cover the increase to the minimum wage? We engaged with the Department of Enterprise back in January. We had no further engagement. And I always wondered where the data came from to back up the actual numbers, because I couldn't work it out. Well, a lot of the information that went round was the vote was based on the Minimum Wage Committee from 2021. And we appear to have forgotten there was more up-to-date information available before we cast our vote in October. I mean, I shared information, quite sensitive information, with people which would have indicated that, you know, spend is down. And if my business is okay, but spend is down, there are other businesses in exactly the same position. But we didn't look into it. We just kind of ignored it because the Minimum Wage Committee in 21 said it was okay to do. Manifesto pledges from 21 said that they were going to align with the minimum wage into the living wage. And I understand, you know, that manifesto pledges are important. But there were so many other things in 2021 manifesto pledges that have never been achieved, and never been achieved because of factors outside everybody's control. And that's the same for the minimum wage.
Has the Chief Minister made the right decision then, in your view, by removing the Treasury Minister?
I think we're in a better position than we were a week ago, because nobody seemed to be listening, or the implication was that we all felt nobody was listening. Whereas, I mean, I've come this morning just to see, I mean, it was always a plan to come this morning just to see where we were up to with it all. And what the Chief Minister has said this morning offers a little hope for some businesses, and we're now in a better position than we were yesterday. So I've slept better last night, I have to say, because, you know, a lot of business owners, we don't have a big flash car, and we don't have a second home in the Med. You know, the reality for us is very, very, very different, but we are all fighting here for our members of staff. And that's the reality for a lot of us here. We are fighting for our staff to keep them in a job. We don't want to have to reduce their hours. We don't want to have to do layoffs. We just want to support them in the best way we can. But if our spend is down, where was that money going to come from?
That was cafe owner Julie Goldie. Enterprise Minister Tim Johnson has shared some of the criticism about the now shelved minimum wage increase.
You're not planning to go anywhere?
No, I'm not planning on going anywhere, Phil. I'm here to carry out the work of government, carry out the work of the Island Plan, and that's what I'm doing.
It has been suggested by a number of Tynwald members that, as you were one of the architects of the changes to the minimum wage going up to the living wage, that maybe you should have gone as well. How would you respond to that?
Well, look, all I can say is this is the will of Tynwald. I mean, clearly, if we work back from where we are today, Phil, right back to, this goes back to the previous administration before I was even an MHK, It was then renewed, the plan to bring parity between minimum wage and living wage as part of the Ireland plan in 2022, before I was even a minister. And as a minister, I have continued to carry on what is the Ireland plan, the government's policy, which is to reach that. Now, over that period of time, we've hit challenges. We've delayed it already from 25 to 26. We were then concerned about the calculations around the living wage, and we made changes to bring forward to the median wage. So there's been a number of changes that have been supported by Timbald. So what I've done is my job.
And in doing that job, have you done enough to listen to local business concerns? We've heard on Manx Radio on several occasions from local business people who think and say that they think the both yourself and the former Treasury Minister now haven't really been listening carefully enough to their concerns.
Well, look, I absolutely accept that, you know, any changes to the minimum wage cause concerns. Clearly, this policy needed another substantial increase. That is why we made some of the changes to try and delay it, to try and give more clarity. But clearly, a lot of businesses feel that that's not enough, and we accept that. And that is why we've made it very clear. We said it right through the autumn, and obviously with the motion that came forward from Mr. Hooper in December, we are coming back with support. We're very much looking at targeted support, what I can do within DfE, what the Treasury could do to help in that process, because we recognise it is a challenge. So the level of concern there's been, there's a real feel and need for change. And I think the other key point to remember here is I was very much working on two points here, you know, and it was around very much around the principles of ensuring that we've got fair enough wages for those on a lower income, but also balancing that against making sure that we don't damage business. And that's a very difficult balance, and there's always going to be debate on that. And that's where we're moving forward with. I think what's important to stress, and what's been proposed today, and what the Chief Minister has already talked about, and which we'll be looking to bring forward, is a new way which was not brought forward by Treasury. And that was substantial changes to allowances, personal allowances. So that's a new thing on the table. So from my point of view, if we can find a way through that honours the needs to make sure that people do get a fair wage, but also takes pressure off business, and we can achieve that in a different way, then I'm quite happy to do that. This is not a die-in-a-ditch thing, but the point is, and the frustrations were, sometimes these things are presented as a fait accompli by Treasury, and clearly these things were not looked at. And I think that it is important that it is looked at. And then we can look to see whether the current position of Timbald, whether they'll be happy to debate that and see what that looks like. So from my point of view as DfE Minister, we are here to support business in any way we can. We do support business. We have people sitting on business within our agencies. And we do have existing support schemes in place. We are looking at enhancing those. I've already made that commitment. And we will continue to have those conversations.
Should you have at least put up the pretense of having a stronger voice for business? You quite clearly will have been saying and doing things behind closed doors that maybe you haven't been able to say in public. But sometimes actually what the various people that you represent in your roles as minister, sometimes they need to feel much more strongly that you are on their side and that you are trying to fight for their interests.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point. And I think it's fair to say that's been lost in translation here. And I accept that, and I accept the level of concern. You can't just ignore that, and that is why it is important that we look again and look at other options of how we still want to get to the same point of making sure that, in real terms, those people are still getting a decent wage, and at the same time, we protect businesses as much as we can. So it's absolutely right from my position as DfE Minister that we look at that, and I think this new option that's come forward gives us the ability to do that. You've got to remember that from my point of view, all I can do is work within my department from what I can do as far as the support mechanisms I have and the power and controls I have over that. And that is what I've been doing and presenting and will continue to do so.
Obviously, the Chief Minister has made his decisions now. How is that going to impact on the way in which you do your job as Enterprise Minister?
Well, I think as I say, what I don't want to do is, preempt the will of Tim Wald. We clearly want to bring forward, either it'll be today or tomorrow, amendments potentially to the motion that's in front of us that does recognise and builds on the narrative of what the Chief Minister said in his statement and what the new Treasury Minister has said. So on that basis, we move forward potentially if that agreement is made in a new place, and I will continue my role, which will be to speak with business. I don't see why this change will make any difference to my views on where we can offer support. I still think that the level of support we're offering and some of the changes we've already discussed with members as part of that motion that came through in December are just as relevant whether we have an increase of 5% or whether we have the increase of 9.9%, because we recognise some of the challenges there are across business. So, it'll be, we'll be getting on with our day job and engaging.
Will it be easier to work with Chris Thomas than it was with Alex Allenson?
Look, I have to work with whoever is in Treasury. I think one of the challenges of being Enterprise Minister, and you'll understand this, Phil, from your time in government, is the relationship between the Enterprise Minister and Treasury Minister is important. We do have that sort of closeness there because of the fact of what we do, what I do with obviously looking at supporting the economy. So obviously I want to work closely with Chris, and over the next months, we've still got a lot to deliver in the department, I'll need Chris's help to be able to do that. So I'll be very determined to work very positively with him.
And you'll still be a minister by the time the election comes?
Well, I've certainly got no intention of going anywhere. At the end of the day, I'm here at the pleasure of the Chief Minister, and if he wants to make a change, well, that's up to him. But I certainly have got more to do. I've got a great team at the Department for Enterprise, and I'm very keen to stay in position and keep moving things forward and keep delivering on lots of things that the department is doing.
That was Aaron Michael MHK, Tim Johnston. The Chief Minister found his voice again in Tin Wald and delivered a U-turn on the minimum wage, which apparently was not possible with the former Treasury Minister in place.
You successfully amended a motion by Julie Edge in relation to the minimum wage, and effectively now Tin Wald's policy has shifted.
The way we're addressing the policy has shifted, absolutely. We needed to change direction. Everybody agrees we need to improve the lives of people, and controlling and managing wages and ensuring we've got the right wage structures in place is clearly part of that solution. But it has been clear for months now that we could not carry on in the same direction. We've had letters from almost every organisation on the island representing charities, farmers, businesses, individual representation. I talked today about how I had been in my constituency and in other businesses talking to the owners and talking to the staff and the fear that is involved about the pressure that government is applying through the rate that we are bringing forward these living wages rises, and change was needed. I made that change at the weekend. We've started the change today, and we will finish that in the budget next month, where we will demonstrate clearly how we can not only ease the pressure on businesses, but we can share the burden. And let me be clear, the business owners and the managers and people who are here today and are presumably listening totally get it. They understand it. But a change of direction was needed. I'm really pleased Tin Wald supported that. And we need to deliver now in the budget in terms of the strategy of taking our share of the burden, releasing the taxation burden so people can have more in their pockets, and in doing so, help us reach the targets that we're talking about in terms of earnings, but delivering it in a net income way, but also generally easing some of the stresses and strains that are felt, not just with the low paid, but everybody throughout the working population of our island. It has been tough. If government can do that successfully, then that's an economic stimulation that's going to work. And all this previous talk about support schemes and everything else, wouldn't have stimulated the economy. That sort of fed money and created distortion in the business community. In fact, that would have been the taxpayer funding government policy. It's crazy, Phil. You know, and in the end, you know, much of this is what drove my decision-making towards the changes that we've made. We've set out the agenda. We've set out the course. Tim will back that. Let's deliver that in the budget, which we will. And we can start to move forward in a slightly different direction.
In essence, your argument has been people would rather have a wage and a job than have an increased minimum wage and potentially no job. What you're proposing is to increase personal taxation allowances, but that comes at a cost too, doesn't it?
Of course it does, absolutely. You know, we've got a responsibility, we've got a new Treasury Minister. I'm not going to take away his thunder by explaining how one will deal with this, the challenge that we've got. But I'm confident that can be done. But this is about the principles today. It is about principles of government sharing responsibility, not just throwing the burden out to business, but our responsibilities as well to make sure that the tax system is encouraging hard work, incentivizing productivity, and encouraging people to succeed and delivering the opportunities to do so, rather than shrinking all that, reducing job opportunities, putting more pressure on business owners. We've got to reverse that cycle, and there are ways to do that. Personal allowance is absolutely one lever that we can use to do that. And what we set out today and why the new Treasury Minister, I think, was brought in was to deliver on that. And that's what we're going to do. And I hope that when we get to the budget next month, we will show people that we've done that without changing fundamentally the costs that were already in the budget and set out in the budget.
That was Aaron Michael MHK Alf Cannon. In perhaps his only misstep in Tynwald, Mr. Cannon spoke of the shrill voice of socialism driving the minimum wage agenda against the will of the people. The Manx Labour Party was quick to issue a rebuttal, and I spoke to Joni Farragher and Sarah Maltby to find out more.
And you've issued a statement subsequent to the Chief Minister's statement in Tynwald in relation to the departures, let's call it that, because there seems to be a debate as to whether they were sacked or whether they chose to leave, the departures of the two ministers. What was your view about the Chief Minister's statement?
Yeah, well, like I've said in the statement, we do welcome a lot of what the Chief Minister said. He was saying things that we would have expected to hear in a Manx Labour Party meeting about people-orientated policies and about using levers within Treasury to influence behaviour, etc. It was good to hear, and we were quite heartened by that. What we don't accept, of course, is the narrative that it's the left-wing members within Tynwald that are to blame. I found that quite surprising to hear from the Chief Minister, actually.
And you know, why do you imagine that he chose to say that?
Well, it did give the impression that that was what this whole ministerial reshuffle was about, actually, which hadn't occurred to me prior to the Chief Minister standing up and then blaming left-wing members. So it was an interesting moment in Tynwald.
And Sarah, you were accused of smiling at the wrong moment or some such?
No, I had a face which maybe the Chief Minister didn't appreciate, but I was just perplexed by his comments and then seemed to be contradicting the fact that, you know, what he was saying was, we're going to put people first, we're going to do this, punching this fist in the air while playing to the public gallery, in my view, and then was surprised that I may have a face on me when I was surprised to say, well, isn't that what we should have been doing from day one, not within 6 months of a general election? And so I don't think he probably appreciated my face, but I didn't really appreciate him calling me out on something which I'm entitled to do. I'm entitled to have a view in here, and if he doesn't like it, then I'm afraid that's not my problem.
And the policies or the policy changes that have been announced by the Chief Minister and his new ministers, they're things that the Manx Labour Party are okay with?
Well, we don't know yet, but what he was saying, certainly what he was saying around the policy changes, did sound, you know, very good in terms of it's listening to the people and we're going to have people-orientated policies, etc. That's the sort of thing that we have been advocating for. We don't know what the policies are yet, so, you know, let's not jump the gun here. We don't know whether we're going to be supportive or not because we haven't heard what the actual policies are. The words that he said around them did sound good, though.
Yeah, so far we've got warm words, but without anything to back it up. We have no idea how he's going to fund or, you know, to sustain these promises that he's made today. Because that's put it out there. These are promises that he's made today in Tim Ward Court, and he's going to be held accountable to those promises.
The the Treasury Minister, the new Treasury Minister, was reading in a very obvious way the 2026 budget. Do you think, I mean, Sarah, you've been a member of Treasury, do you think it is possible for the new Treasury Minister to significantly alter or influence the budget if the budget timetable is to remain intact?
I wouldn't have thought so, to be honest, and that's one of the things that I'd be interested to see, whether this budget really that is given in February is just Alex Hanson's budget with frills on, or whether it is actually being completely torn up, because I really don't think that's possible, and I would hate to see what the Treasury would have brought forward as actually exactly what they would have brought forward anyway, but dressed up to look like it's been this radical change by the Chief Minister and his current Treasury Minister. I guess we'll see.
But going back then to the Chief Minister's comments about trying to support the poorest paid people on the island, which is what he felt he was trying to do at the same time as supporting business, those are policies that even left-wing socialists can support.
If that's what he's going to do, yes. I mean, the only tangible policy that he's actually outlined today is a significant increase in personal allowances. That doesn't just support the poorest, that supports everybody across society, that supports the wealthiest members as well. So that's not a policy that is, you know, in any way supportive of poor people. Although, it will help, and it will help businesses as well. And it's certainly something to be considered, but it's definitely not a policy that we would have said is purely in support of the poorest in our society.
And it is also just a one hit for this year. You know, what happens next year? What happens the year after? That's, you know, you can't just make statements and then just say, that's us, we fixed it now, and that we've made the bold decisions. What happens next? And I think that's the big question that everyone should be asking in September.
At one point, the Chief Minister, as he was being questioned, turned round and was talking to the new Treasury Minister. Is that the very definition of policy on the hoof?
Well, that's an interesting question, Phil. I think most members will have noticed there that the Chief Minister wasn't addressing the President in Tim Ward Court. He was addressing the public back gallery, quite often glancing up to the public gallery to see what response was received from whoever. I can't see the public gallery from my seat. And he was quite often turning around to seemingly consult with new ministers whilst he was speaking. It's something that people can make their own minds up on, but yeah, it was interesting to watch.
In the Chief Minister's statement, he referred to several different things, many of which makes Labour seem happy with. But in response to one of the questions on the statement, he referred to the shrill voice of socialism. Was that a direct dig at the Manx Labour Party?
Well, I think people will have to make up their own minds about what he meant with that. But what I will say is that showed some quite worrying undertones, and I think we should be concerned about the tone that the Chief Minister took as questions progressed on that, and the attitude that was being displayed there.
And I mean, obviously the Chief Minister can have his view, can't he? I guess what he's really referring to is that the left of centre ministers are now shipped out of the Council of Ministers.
That's what it sounded like, isn't it? And I did refer to it earlier on in our interview that I hadn't really thought that was the cause of the reshuffle, but it seemed like that was what the Chief Minister was positioning it as. He was saying, I no longer want any progressive people in my administration. I want to proceed with my own agenda. And I think following hard on the heels of his comments to a committee that he thinks the Chief Minister should have more power and more sole power residing in that role, it shows quite a worrying temperament and direction of travel.
It is, though, for the Chief Minister to decide who he wants in his Council of Ministers, and effectively, you know, some, I mean, I probably count myself among them, might argue that if the Chief Minister and his Treasury Minister have such a fundamental disagreement, which certainly seems to have been the case, then maybe that's, you know, the Chief Minister needs to do exactly what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree, to be honest, Phil. I think what I do object to, though, is the sort of tone and the language used and the aggression that was shown in that, which, you know, I did pose two questions that were respectful questions that, you know, I didn't think there was any undertone at all, really. They were well-phrased and respectful questions and received, I suppose, fairly aggressive or non-responses, which was just a surprise. It just took me aback, I suppose.
Yes, it almost felt like the Chief Minister was picking a fight with the Manx Labour Party.
A little bit, and unexpected. Unexpected, yeah.
That was Douglas East MHK Joni Farragher, and earlier Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby. Next, Julie Edge.
You, as is your wont, had a number of questions on the actual question paper, but of course, before we got to the question paper, the Chief Minister made a statement to Tynwald, and you've been critical of the Chief Minister in the past, but you weren't so critical in your questioning in Tynwald.
I'll still be critical to him when he needs it, but I actually thought the way that he's handled this is the right way forward, and that's my priority for the island, so that we can get some stability. We were just going down a path or a road, if you like, and the journey was never ending, whereas businesses and the economy needed to have a better understanding of, at this point, we're going to do this. So, yeah, I was supportive today. I thought when he said he would do an urgent statement, I think that was his own decision. I don't think anybody pushed him into that. And I thought, well, that's somebody that wants to stand up and be counted for what he has done in the last couple of days. And I think you heard a number of members saying, you know, it should have been sooner. And, you know, that is something that when you say I usually challenge, that's why I would be challenging, because you could see what was happening with regards to the policy direction, and it certainly was moving off to the left of the road rather than to the middle or the right.
Jason Moorhouse, I think, asked the question of the Chief Minister, you know, you had the chance during the minimum wage debate and you sat and said nothing. This was the question he put to the Chief Minister. Is this kind of open dispute between the former Treasury Minister, as he is now, and the Chief Minister, has this been part of the reason why we've perhaps heard so little from the Chief Minister in the course of the last, I don't know, 12 months?
The way that I would expect all of this to have happened from the outset with the minimum wage is Department for Enterprise, they're responsible for bringing the orders forward, and Treasury to work together. It's clear they've worked together on what their policy direction, and then you would expect it to be challenged and argued against in the Council of Ministers if it wasn't the right direction for the island. But even since they were discussing that, there's been significant changes in the cost of living and everything else. So I think it's been a DfE and Treasury policy taken to the Council of Ministers and not necessarily fully supported in there. So, but of course the Chief Minister has to go with the majority, and it's very clear from today that was not his direction that he would have taken if he'd have had a casting vote or something, but we know that can't happen. So
you had a couple of questions to the Chief Minister, one in relation to forensic financial audit of Manx Care and the other in relation to AI development and regulation. Why were you asking those questions?
So, as you know, I successfully, unanimously got an audit of Manx Care with the Auditor General. But there's still concerns around Manx Care and where is the money actually going? How come it's costing so much? We've seen, it's the cost in services has gone up. But then when you compare that with the UK and their NHS, their percentage increases in costs are far less. And I know we're an island, but if it's for provisions or equipment or something, you know, we're buying from the UK anyway. So I thought there's something seriously amiss when you go from a £210 million budget in 2019 with Minister Ashford, and we're nearly up at £400 million. And the percentage increases in that time in the UK are not the same. There's something quite not adding up for me. And the only way to establish that, you can do audit after audit internally, but you need that external review. And a forensic audit follows the money, it follows the pennies, and it follows the pounds. And to me, I know it's expensive, and the Chief Minister said it's expensive, but we need a starting point for any new governance structure, because we cannot just keep throwing more and more money. Virtually, you know, over a third of our budget goes into this area. You'd want to know that your starting point is the right point, and that there hasn't, just been growth for the sake of growth in perhaps in salaries, rather than actually giving that money to the services. We all think we're going to get better services, and we haven't seen that. So the outcome is, well, where's that money gone? Is it purely on just building an empire?
That said, if you talk to the staff, they will all say that the pay rises are justified. Mm. The doctor's dispute on pay is ongoing, and it's pretty obvious in the UK what their thinking is. Are you suggesting that we shouldn't have been paying the staff these extra amounts?
Absolutely nothing to do with the staff. They all work really, really hard. This is about how the budget is actually set up. Where is it actually going to? Everybody deserves the right pay for the right job that they're doing. This is about... When I worked in education, it was always an 80-20 rule. 80% would be staffing costs, 20% would be the rest. So that's the type of, to me, public accountants should be that. There is a process that you should go through. So if your staffing costs are tipping over your percentage, you've got something wrong in your staffing, and it's easy to establish. I'm not seeing any of that sort of data and facts coming out of Manx Care. And to me, that's really important. We need to say, actually, to operate our health services on the Isle of Man and social services, That's the percentage of the budget, and I'm sure the new minister is trying to get to that point. I'm sure they may well have, in the last year since we've had debates on it. But the baseline and how it's structured is really key, and I've never seen that since Manx Care.
And then I suppose the final question: the Chief Minister's judgment has been questioned by some of your colleagues in Tynwald. If there was another no confidence vote, would you be inclined to support the vote or support the Chief Minister?
I think the Isle of Man needs stability. I would support the Chief Minister, obviously. Some of the people that are maybe muting that didn't like the outcome of yesterday, but they also need to remember that when they were doing similar things on the backbenches to members, me being one of them, I know exactly what was going on behind the scenes when I was a minister. And, don't cry over spilt milk when it happens to you if you've been a perpetrator of carrying out some of those behaviours against another minister in the past. You know, that's politics. We all know that's politics. But then to try and change it and say we need a vote of no confidence. No, the confidence vote's been taken. It's been taken in the two ministers that have no longer got a job. That's the confidence vote. What we need to do is move forward with this Chief Minister. And if vote no confidence came, I would actually say we need to go to an early election, because what are we going to get? We're not going to achieve anything in this time. That would be my outcome. So, I would hope that if the Chief Minister had another one, You know, there should have been many votes no confidence in here, and we don't do it, but we seem to target one individual. You know, I think personalities are playing here rather than actually thinking of the Isle of Man, its future, and how we can get there and certainly get to September 26 and try and implement as much as we can and get that stability in the economy and a future. No, nobody is actually looking at, they're looking at the future, and I can't see any evidence today what would change if we had a different chief minister, other than they'd railroad the policies that the chief minister is now standing up against.
That was Onken MHK Julie Edge. MLC newbie Kirsty Morford successfully steered a motion on homelessness through Tynwald.
Your first motion, was it?
Yes. Yes. Yep. Terrifying, but yep. It was for an important subject, so yeah.
And tell us about why you brought this forward, because as we heard from various ministers during the debate, homelessness is something that everyone says that they take seriously.
And everyone does say they take seriously, and I have no doubt that that is what they believe. However, for 20 years, I have struggled to find anywhere for 16 to 21-year-olds to live, for people coming out of prison to live, for people coming out of domestic abuse situations, for people once they're evicted without any notice because somebody wants to sell and they haven't got time to save up or look for alternative accommodation. And as everybody can see on Facebook, this is only getting worse, that rented accommodation is harder and harder to find. So that's why I brought the motion.
And of course, when you say you've been trying to find, this is in your previous guise as a social worker, and obviously now MLC, and you should, as an MLC, have more ability to help in that area.
This is the reason that I put myself forward for this role, is the lack of the statutory legislation that practitioners need to do their job properly. So there was this and the leaving care legislation particularly, but obviously there's also the mental health legislation and capacity legislation, which is years out of date as well. So I'm still very early on and still learning, but I made a commitment that I will do this for the clients and speak on their behalf, and that is what I am doing.
You gave some fairly harrowing testament in your opening speech. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, so I have had the opportunity to work with some amazing individuals over my working career, all of whom have very special personalities. And I've also had the opportunity to work with people long-term over multiples of years. So you develop very strong relationships with people and you see them on a weekly basis, often more than anybody else would. So when one of those clients dies, you obviously hold yourself accountable and responsible and look at everything you could do. And obviously there are coroners that would find if you had failed. Obviously there are things that any practitioner looks back on and thinks I could have done more. But the coroner found in this case that the lack of accommodation was a contributing factor. And so to honour him, I have to push this forward first, and then following that, the leaving care legislation, and that is to honour an amazing young man that I believe should still be here.
You're not an MLC. I think you haven't even done a year yet,
no.
Have you? And yet you must by now have worked out how the system works. Why is it that when so many ministers, I mean, there was talk even of homelessness strategies going back as far as 2010, why does it take so long to get anything done?
Drafting good legislation does take time, and it requires scrutiny and it requires review. And we don't have many drafters, and I did thank the drafters in my speech. So we are reliant upon drafters' space, but also the parliamentary timetable. Every time there's a new election, everything stops. and any legislation that has started stops. And so,
unless it starts in LegCo,
yes. So I suppose what I've seen, not as an MLC but working, is that there will be some movement and then there will be stagnation. And then there will be some movement and then there will be stagnation. But as a member of the Legislative Council, my term spans over this election. So I am hoping that by starting the ball rolling here, I can continue as soon as the new administration starts and continue to push the legislation that has already been agreed and reduce any stagnation periods.
One thing that I'm not sure, is he still the member for housing, Laurie Hooper, was saying in the debate, was actually it's all well and good having legislation. You can have the best legislation in the world, but if government isn't building and providing the housing stock necessary, the legislation will be largely redundant.
I mean, I'm loath to talk on long-term policy because I think that needs to be decided by numerous agencies, and I think that's part of the problem, that numerous agencies aren't involved in the solutions. However, obviously, there is a lack of accommodation. That's known. I would, like I said, every homeless person has individual needs. So some of the client group that I would have been working with would have benefited from supported accommodation that's tailored to building up people's independent living skills, their budgeting skills, their ability to manage their mental health needs whilst they have support in place before living independently. There's sheltered and supported accommodation that might be needed in the short term for victims of domestic abuse. There's specific needs for people with families and young children. So it's very difficult to comment on accommodation because it's so wide and varied. However, what I would say is the cost of B&B and hotel accommodation is exceedingly expensive, and I am sure that there are better ways to provide that short-term emergency accommodation on an island this small.
Unanimous support for your first ever Timbrel motion. That's a pretty good thing to be going home with.
Yeah, I'm very pleased, and I'm sure the young gentleman would be as well, to think that he's achieved this. But also, I think I was able to do a presentation for the Timwood members, and we brought staff from different areas to discuss the realities, and we also had a client that came in to give her real life story. So I think I've laid the groundwork, and obviously, as I said, I have been meeting with the Minister for Cabinet Office with responsibility, but also Minister for Department of Infrastructure. So this motion hasn't really come out of thin air for people. I've worked hard in the scenes behind trying to lay the groundwork, I suppose.
That was Kirsty Morford, MLC. Finally, Kate Lord-Brennan asked a question about Manx cattle's health status. Agriculture Minister Claire Barber explains.
You have some quite hefty issues in the agricultural sector to deal with at the moment. Let's start with the outbreak of blue tongue on the island. What do we know about that?
So, I mean, we've obviously been aware for some time that we have risks relating to blue tongue. That's been a conversation we've been having with stakeholders, both with the union, the FMA, also, you know, talking to UK counterparts about what they might impose on us, and looking at what's been happening in Northern Ireland. We know they've had an outbreak. Jersey have had an outbreak. So really, we did feel that it was likely, given it spread by midges, that the incidence of it in all of our surrounding nations would put us at risk. Yesterday evening, the vet was notified that tests that we'd taken from a number of cows that had spontaneously aborted. One of the signs that can be happening with the most recent cases of blue tongue is that the animals appear healthy but have fertility issues. So the vet had taken those samples and we were notified that those animals were positive in terms of blue tongue antibodies, meaning they've had it, but they don't necessarily have it right now. So we obviously immediately got in touch with the UK in terms of the exports. We knew that the boat was imminently due to go, but actually positive news was that the UK feeling was we could go ahead with those. We simply had to make it clear that we're no longer a blue tongue free country, which we were fine with. And obviously we're now stepping into the surveillance testing, which the animal health team are leading on.
And of course, for most people in the Isle of Man, this is a largely meaningless conversation, because most people, I guess, don't really know what blue tongue is and what the implication of it is. So perhaps you could fill them in.
Yeah, so I think one of the most important messages I'd really like to get across is that blue tongue has no impact on the meat and on the animals entering the meat trade. It can be eaten, it's absolutely fine, fit for human consumption. I think that's really important. We know that England and Wales have set up their whole area as restriction zones. They know they have blue tongue there. We are in a position now when we have an awareness of that. As I say, Jersey are in the same position. Scotland, interestingly, haven't had an outbreak at this point. From my perspective, that's a really key message. In terms of the actual animals, previously there had been health indications, but the biggest issue at present that's being seen is relating to fertility. And of course, that's a significant risk and something that we want to better understand in terms of the detail we'll get back from our surveillance testing, which will tell us which strain it is that's been circulating here.
So then moving on to the other cattle-related issue that you're having to deal with, perhaps if you could explain it to us. Clearly this was an issue that was raised with you in question time by, I think it was Julie Edge? I think it was. Kate Lord Brennan, apologies. Raised by Kate Lord Brennan in question time. What is that issue all about?
So this is slightly different because we don't actually have an issue, and it's the fact we don't have an issue that I think is important. As things stood previously, we had always been captured under the UK status. And then over...
And this is the status for...
This is for BSE, so bovine spongiform encephalopathy. Get the word right. We had been on the same status as them. That was a controlled status, so that means that when animals are slaughtered, that's fine, everything carries as normal. And then an additional piece of work at the end is to take out specified retained products. It's essentially the spinal cord. So there's a specific process that has to happen in the abattoirs, and that's the same as has happened Scotland, England, Wales, Isle of Man, Jersey, and Guernsey. So that's how we've all operated. Back in March 2025, the chief vet here was notified that the UK had submitted an application for their status to be changed to negligible, but that had already gone in. It was all well in process, and they were expecting an outcome fairly imminently. There was no opportunity for us to join that process, but they shared their documents with us. They were all reviewed by our vet, and a piece of work started about how we would submit our application, as you'd expect. Unfortunately, in the intervening period, what has then happened in November is we've been notified that not only has their status changed, but they've also made an application they didn't notify us of to actually change their processes. And that is an application that goes to the EU, so we never had any notification of that. Had we had that, we may have acted differently. Interestingly, other jurisdictions, which was talked about in the questioning today, had their statuses reduced to negligible, but had consciously decided not to change their processes. And it's the change in process that is key, because obviously at the minute a significant quantity of our cattle go over to the UK for slaughter, and when they go to some of those abattoirs, they are now processing in a way that would not be sufficient for our livestock. So this has an impact in terms of exporting through marts in the UK, exporting for breeding stock, and also exporting direct for slaughter. In terms of our local slaughter, there's no impact because we're continuing doing things exactly as we had previously. So there's a number of different impacts for different people, whether they're exporting breeding stock for fattening, whether they're exporting for slaughter. And that is a piece of work at the minute we're trying to understand. We also know that different abattoirs are acting in different ways. Some are continuing to remove the SRM. Some have decided not to do that anymore.
SRM?
That's the specified retained materials, the spinal cord. And some have determined that they're just not going to deal with Manx animals because it's in the too difficult box. A lot of that we need to unpick, and we've been liaising with organisations in the UK that represent different bodies. We've also written to the Secretary of State in the UK to make it very clear that this is a far from ideal situation, and also to make it make them aware that this is two situations now, the BSE and also with the blue tongue, where we had struggled to get interaction from the UK, which has then detrimentally affected us, and it's not without us trying. So there's clearly an issue around communication. That's something that we have reached out. I have written personally to the Secretary of State. The Chief Minister has supported from his perspective with his links through the UK. And we really want to get to a stronger position in terms of that relationship because it's just critical.
That was Douglas East MHK Claire Barber. So what do you think? Was Alf Cannon right to slam on the brakes and halt the significant increase in the minimum wage? Good for local business, perhaps, but is it good for the lowest paid workers in the Manx economy? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. I'm Phil Gorn. Go to Maus and Geistach Rum. Thanks for listening.